Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you read the New York Times every day, you may have to skip reading it on Thursday. That's because about 1,000 unionized Times staffers are threatening a walkout on Thursday if they don't reach agreement on a new contract by then. You know, we've talked on the show recently about the threatened railroad strike, the ongoing adjunct professor strike at the New School, Amazon, of course, and others. Well, now it's the New York Times on the verge of a walkout. And to be clear, they are threatening a one-day walkout, not an ongoing strike. But it's still a big deal, still a big statement if it happens. And we'll talk now about why they're at this point with New York Magazine features writer Sean McCreesh, who's written two articles recently on the labor situation at the Times. Sean, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So to start out, you reported on a letter delivered to management on Friday, signed by more than 1,000 Times employees, that demands a better offer on healthcare funds, return to the office policies, and their pension plan. But you report with that what they really want is permanent increases in the base pay, a bigger share of the Times profits. And you cite that the staff is mad because they feel the paper is sitting on a pot of gold. So let me ask you this first. As far as you can tell, how profitable is the New York Times these days? I thought newspapers are going out of business all over the country.
Yeah, so I think to start, we should go back a couple years and sort of explain the economic dynamics here, because the backstory is really important. And that's that there were two sort of major events in the last couple years that changed everything, which is Donald Trump and the pandemic. And, you know, we're coming out of a time where for the last many years, newspapers and journalism was suddenly hot again and sort of very chic, and people were subscribing, and there was this sort of, you know, commercials about the New York Times and Truth being played at the Oscars, and Democracy Dies in Darkness at the Washington Post, and all this sort of thing. And then when the pandemic hit, everybody was, you know, similarly freaked out and sitting at home and on their phones all day long. And so subscriptions continued to boom. And now we're coming out of that era, and both those things are sort of ending, and subscriptions are falling flat at other news organizations. But the Times, to its credit, used the momentum from that era to transform the business into something beyond a newspaper. So they used all the money they bought, you know, they made other acquisitions, and they sort of diversified the income stream, and they've transformed it into a really robust business. It's sort of the greatest success story in the legacy media these days. And that is really why the employees are sort of steamed now, because they look at you know, if they just spend $200 million to buy The Athletic, another news website, and they feel that while it's great that the company's being transformed into what its leaders would like us to see it as, more of a tech company almost, the journalists are sort of trying to remind them that, hey, this whole thing is built on us and our newsroom, and you need to give us a cut.
Yeah, and it's interesting, before we get off of Times profitability, interesting that you make the point in your article that there are economic headwinds for major media companies in general right now, citing layoffs at CBS and CNN that just happened, and the Washington Post killed its Sunday magazine, and yet the New York Times thrives and thrives, it seems like. And what does the New York Times reporter make? I mean, I'm sure there's a scale, and there are bigger journalistic stars who make more than other staffers. So how would you begin to describe what people make as New York Times journalists that has many dissatisfied?
Yeah, so the average, average isn't the right word. The median salary for a reporter that's represented by the News Guild,
And just so people know what median means, this comes up all the time, but median means half, in this case, half the people make above this number and half the people make below this number. Go ahead.
Right. So that's 133,000. And again, there are, you know, star reporters and others who make a lot more, a few who make less, but you're looking at about 133,000. And you know, that's more than most journalists make. I mean, the one thing here is that for as upset as the Times employees are, and they say, I guess rightfully so, that it's very difficult to live on that salary and raise a family and have an apartment in New York City. There are many other media workers who make a lot less. And so there's some grumbling about that, I would say, from other corners of the media, but yeah.
Nevertheless, it's like the baseball players. I've used this analogy before. You know, fans will say ticket prices are so high because Jacob deGrom is making $43 million a year or whatever it is. Or I should say Justin Verlander, since he just came to the Mets. But really, that's because the companies, the owners, make so much money that that's just sort of their fair share that they're negotiating. The owners are still going away with a ton of money, and they'll charge whatever people will pay for tickets, no matter what they pay in salaries. So in this case, yeah, a Times staffer, it may sound like a lot of money compared to other journalists, but what's the relevant comparison is what the company is making, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, the Times, it's not a public utility. It's a business. They're shareholders. Value needs to be created for the shareholders. But that's kind of at the root of this, too. And what you say is true. I mean, the CEO, she makes $5.8 million. That's up from $4 million the year before. The publisher, his compensation grew nearly 50% last year to $3.6 million. Previously, the executives made more. In their defense, the old CEOs actually made more. But yeah, I mean, the executives make a lot of money there.
Right. Some of the staff anger, as you report, is around CEO pay. You reported that the staffer site publisher A.G. Sulzberger himself is getting a raise last year from $2.4 million to $3.6 million, up 50%. The CEO, Meredith Kopit-Levien, went from $4 million to $5.8 million. The staffers assert, these are their numbers, I can't confirm them, but this is what the staffers are saying they make.
They're from an SEC proxy statement.
That's a good source. Right.
Yeah,
a public source. So what kind of increase do the staffers say is fair given that?
This is tricky. There's such a Byzantine job classification, and the numbers that each side is throwing out, they vary wildly depending on the employee. But essentially, they want something, I think, I can't remember the exact number right now. I think it's something in like a 6% range of a standard increase in pay. I mean, another thing that's happening here is because they've gone for so long without a contract, they're saying that whatever number they finally get needs to amortize out to include the previous year or two where they got nothing. And then once you factor in inflation, it's pretty complicated.
Listeners, we can take a few phone calls on this. Any New York Times staffers want to call in and weigh in? You can do so anonymously. You know, you don't have to say, hi, this is Maureen in Washington, or Maggie at Mar-a-Lago, or Jamel in Charlottesville, or anything like that. You can be John Doe in Westchester if you want. On the management side, you don't have to call in as Mr. Sulzberger from Manhattan. You can be anonymous too. Or anyone with a comment or a question who's just a New York Times reader, or maybe you don't even read the New York Times. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer for Sean McCreech, covering the Times labor dispute for New York Magazine. So, Sean, if they walk out on Thursday, what, if anything, will people see on the Times website, and will a print edition be printed?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. So right now they're actually negotiating as we speak, and the employees were just informed that they're all being docked a day's pay. The company's treating today as a strike, and so they're even more irate today than they were yesterday. But many of them tell me today they do not expect a compromise to be reached. So, you know, the word is that they will be walking out on Thursday. I think for the average reader who's not following the story, you maybe won't notice. The Times is a huge organization. Not everybody is in the guild. A lot of the foreign correspondents are not in the guild. A lot of the bureau chiefs are not in the guild. A lot of reporting will still occur today and tomorrow, so things could be teed up for Tuesday. There are always kind of evergreen stories laying around. You know, basically there will be enough to sort of keep up, you know, I guess the facade. And it's not like the app on your phone is going to go blank all of a sudden. But it is a full 24 hours without reporting, which is pretty unprecedented. I think the last time something like this has happened is 1978. There have been other brief sort of walkouts for an afternoon or an hour that were kind of more about solidarity displays when other at other points of tense negotiation. But, you know, the walkout to me and the idea of a work stoppage, what it brings to mind for me is the fact that in the last many years, the sort of local news infrastructure in this country has been rotted out so terribly that the New York Times is one of the only, if not the only in some parts of the country, legit news organization we have to cover big stories that break. And their national team is, that is, all those reporters are in the Guild. So if there's a school shooting on Thursday or a wildfire or an earthquake or a hurricane, the New York Times just, they're not going to have any boots on the ground for that. And nobody's going to cross the picket line. So that's where it might get interesting.
Why just a one-day walkout then? Why not a full-fledged strike with no end date until they settle a contract?
Yeah, these people, nobody wants to strike. I think that this is kind of, it's a show of force. I think they really want to show their management and their publisher how pissed off they are. And, you know, if this doesn't do it, if this doesn't move the needle at all, or at least enough for them, then they're going to start. The next step is to start talking about a strike authorization vote. But again, nobody wants it to get to that.
This is WNYC, FM HD and AM New York, WNJT, FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey public radio and live streaming at WNYC.org as we talk about the potential walkout of perhaps more than 1,000 New York Times staffers on Thursday if they don't come up with a contract agreement. 212-433-WNYC. It's Sean McCreesh, our guest, who's writing about this for New York Magazine. Brenda in Brick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. I am calling because I wanted to know how much the subscriptions went up after the New York Times started carrying Wordle, and how many people, friends of mine, are subscribing to it now because they want Wordle bot. Figure that's more money for the Times.
Wordle, the word game that people, in case you know, some of the listeners don't know, do you know the answer to the question? And is Wordle only available to Times subscribers?
That is a good question. I'm actually not sure. The only thing I can really say about this is that as the Times incorporates things like Wordle and the Athletic and the Recipes app, and they've got games and everything else like this, there's also this activist investor that's bought up 7% of the stock or the shares. And there are sort of business world people trying to push the publisher and the CEO to bundle up some of these other properties and wring more out of subscribers and try to convert, you know, people who are just paying to read the paper, trying to get them to pay for these other properties too. So I don't have exact numbers, but all these kind of different little properties that are factored in are part of the business success story of the paper right now.
Right. Although I've wondered about this dynamic in the staffers' dissatisfaction, you know, about all the money the Times has spent acquiring things in recent years, including Wordle and the sports journalism site, The Athletic, as you mentioned, which I've read they paid $500 million for. But if we assume that those are investments in future profits, not luxury items to please the owners, then where do they come into contract negotiations?
Yeah, what's interesting to me about this is that the CEO and the publisher are very capable. The reason the Times is a huge success right now is because of these business moves that they've made, and that's allowing the employees to ask for a bigger salary bump. On the other hand, I think what the employees, they tell me, the newsroom, the way they see it, is that you can buy all these other things and that's great. But at the end of the day, what makes this business work are the journalists. And this is a very specialized workforce. These are reporters at the top of their game. They have sources, they have relationships with the most important people in Washington and on Wall Street that tell them things that make it the best paper in America. Some of these people put their lives on the line to do this job. And all of that falls apart if you don't pay the newsroom. So you can buy as many cooking apps and word games as you want, but if the reporters aren't out there doing their jobs, then it doesn't work.
Ella in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ella.
Hi, thanks for having me, Brian.
And you are, I see, a New York Times employee?
That's correct. And a Gal member.
What would you like to say?
You know, I came in a little late on this call this morning, so I didn't hear everything you guys were talking about earlier. But, you know, I just want to say from my perspective as a rank-and-file guild member, a member of the New York Times unit, that I'm really excited and feel really heartened by, like, all of our members coming together to do this because, you know, the way that the company has been acting is really disheartening, has been really demoralizing, that it's been months and months and months. We've been so clear for so long about what it will take, about what we need, about why these things are important. And it's not just that, you know, we want our wages to keep up with inflation, which we certainly do. Like, people haven't gotten raises since March 2020, but also that, you know, it's about keeping the standard of living in New York City, of having well-paid journalism jobs so people can do this work, about having new people who come in the door, who, you know, may not have family money, who can work at the New York Times and make our journalism better. And, you know, we have people in our unit who make very low amounts, who make under $60,000 a year, under, I think there's even some under $50,000 a year, not many, but some, and we're also fighting for higher minimum scales, you know, floor salaries in our unit, and that's huge too.
Right, decent minimum salary. You know, I'm going to have to go because the line is so bad. I don't know if management's jamming your line or something like that, but the crackling is so bad. I'm going to have to leave it there, but you got a lot of stuff on the table. Ella, thank you. And I think we have another from the staff, Andrea, on the Upper East Side. You're on WNYC. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Can you hear me?
What do you do?
Great. I'm a news designer at the New York Times. I design pages for the Sunday National section. It's actually, I really love my job. It's something that I take a lot of pride in.
Neat.
I just wanted to call. Yeah, I love it. I mean, I've been doing that for 2 years. I've been at the New York Times for six. But yeah, I wanted to call and just point out that our unit is huge. We have security guards, we have news assistants, we have ad sales people. So we talk a lot about the newsroom, but this is bigger than the newsroom. This is all the people who support the newsroom. And it may be that some of our star reporters do make really big salaries, but I also know a lot of people who took pay cuts to work at the New York Times because they really believe in the mission. So part of this, like as Ella was saying, is really raising our salary floors, and it also becomes a diversity issue, right? Because we want people to be able to afford to live in New York, who come from all sorts of different backgrounds. We want people to be able to afford to retire. I talked to one coworker who said, I'm going to be the first person in my family who gets to retire because of the pension at the New York Times. Mm. And I think that really hit me.
So what do you think is the most important economic demand? Is it the salary floor, the minimum pay for people as they start out? And if so, do you have any numbers on that? Or whichever one you would list as the most important economic demand?
I definitely think that the salary floor is probably the single, for me and for a lot of people, the single most important thing. You know, I think I make enough money. I don't think our security guards make enough money. I think our proposal raises the salary floor, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure to $65,000 a year, which I don't think is unreasonable when you're asking people to live and work in New York.
So security guards are in the same union at the New York Times building as some of the journalists?
That's correct.
That's a good thing, I think. Andrea, thank you.
I think so, too. We love them. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. What's the back to office issue that you referred to in your article, Sean?
They're also negotiating over return to office policies. And, you know, I don't have the exact specifics on where they are with that right now, but they don't want to just go right back to the policies that were pre-pandemic. So that's a sticking point, too. But, you know, the Times has this big, giant newsroom. So they obviously, you can see why the management would want employees to come back, too. So that's part of it. I think these things are ancillary compared to the salary. But that's all kind of sticking points, too.
Interesting. So last question, I guess, does a 1-day walkout, if this happens on Thursday, give real leverage or just make people like us write and talk about it?
We're about to find out, I guess.
I guess so. And we will be finding out in, among other places, New York Magazine, where feature writer Sean McCreesh has been covering the New York Times labor dispute. Thanks for coming on with us, Sean. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.